You know, when you're not a part of something, you can sometimes form opinions of what it's like from the outside looking in. And sometimes those opinions from the outside looking in may not always be that accurate. I think back to experiences I had when I was growing up, and if you weren't a part of a certain group, you would kind of have a perception of what it was like to be a part of that group. And you always kind of wondered, okay, if I ever get invited in, what will it really be like? This was kind of pronounced when I went off to college. I was at Young Harris College my first 2 years of school. Young Harris College at the time was a small two-year school in the North Georgia Mountains. It's still in the North Georgia Mountains. It's just not 2 years anymore. They didn't move the school. But it was this really interesting place because they had all these different student organizations. But then they not only had all these student organizations and different ways that you could be involved, they also had secret societies. Yeah, big deal. And secret societies were kind of a thing. There was a big, well-known secret society for guys, and then there was another one that was like the partner one to it for girls. And I say it was a secret society. Everybody knew about it. I mean, it was like, you know, the worst-kept secret in the world. And I kind of figured out as I was going along that there was a group of my friends that I was in organizations with who kind of had like their little side huddles. And you start kind of putting things together. You're like, there's a secret society. People that I'm friends with kind of huddle off and talk about something that I don't know about. Maybe, oh, I get it. Okay, so you kind of figure out that they were invited into this thing and you weren't. And so you're kind of scratching your head and you're like, why wasn't I invited? And so you start creating like these ideas of what it's like. What do they do? What am I missing out on? You have that FOMO, that fear of missing out. And you're just kind of like, you know, what in the world is the deal with this thing that they are a part of? So me and a friend of mine, we're just kind of sitting around one day. And we said, you know what? This is ridiculous that they get to have a secret society. And we weren't invited to be a part of a secret society. And so what we did was we created a secret society to make fun of secret societies. That was our entire mission statement. Every organization needs a mission statement. That was our mission statement, was to make fun of secret societies. We would get together every couple of weeks, and we would just sit around, and we would goof off, and we would make fun of all the other secret societies. And so that was our thing. We had a great time. It was such a compelling mission. I don't think it made it past the second generation of group. It just kind of died out after we left. And, you know, years later, you're sitting around having conversations, and people aren't as uptight as they are when they're younger and they're a part of something secret. And so people kind of let the guard down and they start talking about things. And you find out that really all this group of people did that was a part of a secret society was really they just sat around and goofed off and hung out with their friends. And I said, yeah, we did that before we were a secret society. We called it going to Huddle House at 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it wasn't really that big of a deal to be a part of a secret society. And so, but from the outside looking in, when you're not a part of something, you can create this perception of what it actually is, and it may not be exactly what you thought it was all along. And so as we go through this series, what we're going to look at is we're going to look at the idea of how sometimes if you're not in to following Jesus, if you're not in the game, if you're not following Jesus and living your life according to the call that he has put on our lives, sometimes we can miss out and we could think the wrong things about what it means to follow Jesus. Now here's what I mean by this. When we look at people who are not a part of the church, and we look at what their perceptions are of the church, and we look at what people's perceptions are of Christianity and what it means to be a follower of Jesus, a lot of times what they come up with has some accuracy to it, maybe has some constructive criticism that we could listen to, but a lot of times it's not exactly in line with what Jesus actually calls people to do and what Jesus calls people to be. And so that's what we want to explore in this series is what exactly does it mean to follow Jesus? Now, here's a quote that I want to share with you. This is from Kerry Newhoff. He is a Canadian pastor who's done a lot of work across the United States and Canada on Christianity. He was a pastor for many years, and now he's a leadership guru and has a podcast that's incredibly beneficial and wonderful. And he does a lot of research on church trends. And one of the church trends he came up with recently is he said 80% of practicing Christians have a positive view of the church. Only 21% of non-Christians think of the church in a positive way. That's a startling gap. In other words, what he's saying is that people who are on the inside, people who are here every Sunday, and if you're here the Sunday after Easter, you're here pretty much every Sunday. So if you're here the Sunday after Easter, if you're engaged in the life of the church, then you probably have a positive view of the church. You probably have a positive idea of what the church is all about and what Christianity is all about. But if you are not a part of the church, there is a very, very low likelihood that you have a positive view of what's going on here. It's kind of that mentality of you're not a part of the group. Maybe your perception is it's something different than what you thought, and it may not be completely accurate. Now, the question is, what is it that people see that's different? What is it that people see about the church that maybe makes them not want to be a part of the church? What is it that people see about being a Christian that maybe makes them not want to engage and follow Jesus? So here's another quote. This is from a guy named Keith Plummer, and he is a professor of theology at Kern University in Pennsylvania, and this is what he says. He surveys his students. Every year, he requires his students to go out and interview somebody who's a non-Christian. So he has like the set of questions that he gives them, and they go out and they interview people who are not Christians about their different perceptions, and what people typically will always come back with is something along these lines. He says, in other words, the perception of many unbelievers is that Christianity is primarily an ethical code. It's heavy on right conduct, but light on redemption and grace. Now, when we read that, we're like, okay, yeah, there's some ethical code. There's some things that we're called to do. But, you know, shouldn't the grace and the redemption be more emphasized? Well, the perception that people who are outside the church, the people who don't know Jesus, is that that's not necessarily what it's all about. That they haven't seen that perception. They haven't seen the redemption and the grace. They just see it as, okay, you've got to live in a certain kind of way. A friend of mine in college, her dad never would go to church, and he said that his perception of Christianity was they were good people, they didn't drink, and they picked up trash on the side of the road. I was like, those are all great ways to live your life, but there's a little bit more to following Jesus than that. So here's the big question. What does it really mean to follow Jesus? What does it really mean for us to follow Jesus? And in order to understand that, I don't want us to come up with, you know, our church's perception on that. I don't want us to have a mission statement that we come up with that says, this is what it means to follow Jesus. Instead, let's go back and look at Jesus and what Jesus said it was all about to follow him. And so as we move through this Easter season, one of the things that we do when we celebrate Easter is we don't just do it for one Sunday. Last Sunday was great. It was a lot of fun. There was nowhere to sit. It was awesome. And then we had that great experience, but we want to keep it going, and we want to keep diving further into our faith. And what people have traditionally focused on during the season of Easter is the idea of what does it mean for us to be people who have joined together with Jesus in resurrection, who have joined together in new life, and what better way to understand the new life that Jesus offers us than to look at what it means to truly follow Jesus. And so we're going to go back in time, and there's actually a biblical precedent for this. When Jesus is appearing to people on Easter Sunday, he tells them to go back to Galilee, to go to Galilee. That was where his ministry had started. So what we're going to do is we're going to go with Jesus back to Galilee, to where his ministry first started. He's going through, as we just read in Matthew chapter 4, he's proclaiming the kingdom of heaven is near, repent for the kingdom of heaven is near, and he's calling his disciples to follow him. Those first few disciples that come and join his movement, he's calling them. And here's what's significant about the way that Jesus goes about this. So we look at that chapter 4, and I'm just going to read one verse, and there's going to be one part of it that I want us to focus in on, because this is such a key detail that we often overlook. So verse 18 of chapter 4, it says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. And here's the key phrase I want you to pick up on, and we're going to focus in on for a bit. For they were fishermen. Now, here's why that's important. A lot of times we read this and we go, okay, Jesus is giving the occupation of the people who were a part of his movement. But to people in the first century, the people who lived when Jesus lived, it would have been incredibly significant that Jesus goes and picks fishermen to be a part of this movement. Now, here is why. The way that it would work in Jewish society is that when you were growing up in first century Judaism, you would, as a young male, you would go and learn the Torah. And so the way that it would work is you would go off to a synagogue, you would study there with the rabbis, and they would teach you the Torah. And so as you're going along, there were different checkpoints. And as you got to these different checkpoints, you would essentially be evaluated as to whether you could keep going or not. And so the first stage would be that you would go through and you would read the Torah and you would basically memorize Genesis through Deuteronomy, first five books of the Bible. Seems pretty incredible to think about, but in that culture, it was mostly an oral culture. And so people would memorize the words of Scripture. And then if you were considered the best of the best, what would happen is you would get to keep going in your training. And so you're going to keep going in your training, and you're going even further, and you go even deeper into it, and you start reading all of the prophets, you start reading all of the different writings of the Old Testament, and by the time you reached a certain age, you would have learned pretty much the whole Bible as they knew it at that point, which was the Old Testament, which, in case you're wondering, is about that thick in my Bible. And so you were going deeper and deeper and deeper into it, but it was kind of like, you know, if you ever pay attention to the National Football League, they have different cuts that they make as you're moving through the training. So right now, they just had the NFL draft. It was the past few days. Georgia had a few players drafted, no big deal. And so, you know, that happens. And then there are all these players that will be picked up as undrafted free agents. And then there will be people who have been around the league for a few years and they just need to fill a spot and they're free agents, so they get added too. And so they'll have like 90 people on the roster. Well, by the time they get to the beginning of the season, they've got to be down to 53 people on the roster. And so in order to get there, there are a series of cuts. There's the first cut where they get it down to, say, 70, and then they have another cut. I can't remember all the numbers, but they go through, and there are different cutoff points. Well, it was the exact same way in Judaism. If you were considered the best of the best, you kept going. If you weren't, bye, you can head home now. And you would just keep going through, and then you would eventually get to this point. If you have been like the star student, you have been a five-star recruit, you are absolutely knocking it out of the park with your understanding of the Old Testament, the Torah, what it means to follow God and to keep His law, and you were living the life and living the life fully into that, and you were considered to be flawless in the way that you were living out what the law commands us to do, then, and only then, could you go and interview, essentially, to be a disciple of a rabbi. And so you would go, and you would be interviewed, and you would just be drilled with all these questions. You had to have everything down. And if you were considered good enough to make the cut, a rabbi would invite you into their fold. You would become a disciple of that rabbi, and you would continue on in your training to eventually one day maybe be a rabbi yourself. This was the path that every Jewish male would start out on. But as those cuts hit along the way, people were said, okay, you've done great. Keep the law, keep it in your heart, but you don't have what it takes to keep going. Just head on home, work with your dad, pick up the family business, and you'll make a good living and a happy life. And that was the path that everybody took. So what does this verse mean in chapter 4, verse 18? As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Okay, this is so important for us to understand what it means to follow Jesus. Because Peter, okay, this is Peter. Peter is going to go on to be the leader of the church after Jesus dies and ascends and raises and ascends to heaven. We just lost a pope in the past week, okay? The line of popes traces back to Peter, okay? He's a significant figure. And what we're told about what it means to follow Jesus in this story is it's not the best of the best. Why do we know that? Peter already got cut. Peter already got cut loose. He didn't make the cut. He didn't make the in crowd. He was not invited to go further in his training. He was not considered to be overly qualified. He was not someone that the other Jewish leaders had looked at and said, this guy gets it. He understands what it means to be a disciple of God. He understands what it means to keep the Torah. He understands what it means. He's got exceptional potential. We want him to keep going. Now, at some point along the way, Peter got sent home, and he goes to work in the family business. And Jesus doesn't go walking around the synagogues trying to find who the best of the best are. Jesus goes out to the people who were sent home probably years beforehand, And he says, you are the people that I'm going to change the world with. And here's the reality for us. There is no specialized training to follow Jesus. If you walked in here this morning and you were like, he said the reading was in Matthew. I can't even begin to tell you where that is. I don't even know where the table of contents is in my Bible. That's great. That's fine. There is no specialized training to follow Jesus. Jesus goes to people who had flunked out, maybe with honors, but they had flunked out at some point along the way in their training. And yet those are the ones that he says, come and follow me. And he puts together this band of 12. And within that band of 12, there were three, and they're all mentioned in this story in chapter 4. There were two brothers, James and John, and then there was Peter. And that band of three were the ones that Jesus would kind of pull aside, and he would entrust with them the deep secrets of the kingdom. He would entrust with them what it meant to understand what Jesus coming to earth and leading the people was all about. And these are the people that started out not with the specialized training. They started out as simple fishermen, people who had been sent home by the rabbis saying, you don't have what it takes. Go home and learn the family trade and make a happy life. And those are the people that God chooses to use to change the world. Now, the reason this is important is because many of us think that we have to have certain qualifications before we can follow Jesus. It's kind of like, I don't know if you did this when you were growing up, but I would always brush my teeth extra hard before going to see the dentist. Anybody do that? It's like, you know, 6 months of bad behavior. I'm going to make it all up in this one brushing. That was my mentality growing up. And a lot of people approach following Jesus that way. It's like that mentality that Keith Plummer was talking about. It's this ethical code. It's this burden. It's something that where you have to measure up. And a lot of times we're like, okay, we got to put on a good face. We're going to church today. We've got to make sure that we have the right presentation. Let's make sure that people look at us like, you know, those people belong here. And the reality is Jesus doesn't look at us that way. Jesus looks at people and he says, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter where you flunked out of the training. It doesn't matter if you even know how to spell Torah or Matthew or John or any of the other books of the Bible. What matters is that you come and follow him. No specialized training to follow Jesus. Now, there's a counter passage to this a little later on. And I love this passage. It's such a beautiful passage. And it's got such words of comfort to it. And it's a different kind of invitation. It's not an invitation necessarily to follow Jesus and to be one of his disciples. It's really more of an invitation for what it means to enter into the life that Jesus had for them. Now, to understand this, for us to understand what this passage is all about in Matthew chapter 11, it's important to know that the religious leaders of that day, the largest group, the most well-known group that's mentioned throughout the Gospels is a group called the Pharisees. They were all about following the law, you know, every single cross T, every single dotted I, you had to follow everything exactly. And the Pharisees would live their lives in such a holier-than-thou way, and they expected everybody to be able to take on the responsibility and the burden of God's law. Now, Paul, who is one of the New Testament writers, he ends up converting to Christianity. He has this dramatic experience. We talked about this back at the beginning of April, if you were here that Sunday. And Paul has this dramatic experience where he encounters Jesus. His life is transformed. He goes from persecuting the church to I am following Jesus. And not only that, I'm going to tell the entire world about Jesus. And Paul was a Pharisee. And Paul lived his life in that same way. You've got to follow everything in the law. You've got to do everything right. You've got to follow the ethical standards. And it just became this burden. And he ends up writing all these letters to these churches as he's starting them and as he's finding out about other Christian communities starting up. And what he ends up communicating over and over and over to them is that, you know what? None of us were able to stand up to the burden of the law. None of us could do everything perfect. There always was going to be part of us where we realized no matter how hard we tried, we weren't going to be able to make it. We weren't going to be able to make the cut. Even if we did everything as flawlessly as we possibly could, there was still going to be a part of our human flesh that was going to keep us from being able to do every single thing that had been required in the Bible of people. But the Pharisees, they were just hell-bent on it. They were like, we are going to make sure people follow it, and we're going to place it as a heavy burden upon people that they've got to do everything exactly right. But here's what Jesus says. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Now, when we read that, man, I don't know who woke up tired this morning. I don't know who had a rough week this past week. I don't know who's carrying anxieties and burdens and things like, gosh, that we could just stop with that one verse. I mean, that there's so much comfort in that one verse. But it's not just about the peace and the rest that we need for our souls. It's about relieving ourselves of the pressure and the stress and the burden of always trying to measure up, of always trying to be the ones who do everything exactly right. And this is what Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. The yoke would be what you would take on from the rabbi. So you would take on the yoke. It was considered, you know, like a yoke of oxen. You would take on the yoke. You would take on the burden of what they taught and what they required of you. But Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. And here is the reality of this. There is no more inviting path than following Jesus. Now, there is a reality that Jesus explains in the Gospels that there will be trials that we face when we follow Jesus. There will be hardship when we follow Jesus. There will be sacrifices we have to make. He's not saying it's just easy to come follow me and you don't have to really do anything. What he is saying is it doesn't require you to do the heavy lifting, because he has done the heavy lifting for us. Jesus dying on the cross, Jesus raising again, was about inviting us into that rest. It was about taking on the sins that we could not address on our own. It was about giving us the invitation to follow into a path that was meant to be all about rest and hope and freedom for our souls instead of the burden of always trying to measure up. He looks at a people who are weary because they have never been able to measure up to the incredibly high standard that the religious leaders of that day had put upon them. And he says, come to me, all you who are weary, you're worn out about this, I'm going to give you rest. Now, here's why this is such an important inviting path for us. Because many of us, again, feel like we have to have it all together before we can come and follow Jesus. But Jesus doesn't look at it that way. Instead, Jesus says, come, follow me. Now, there's a traditional way that we see how people typically think about being a part of a group. And it goes like this. And this is the way that a lot of churches operate. And I hope and I pray that following the path of Jesus, we can reverse this, because I see Jesus do it in reverse. The way it works for most social groups, most religious groups, is if you behave in a certain kind of way and you believe a certain kind of way, then you can belong. If your behavior is in line with the behavior of everybody else that's a part of this group, if you believe the same things that we do, then we're going to invite you to belong. It's kind of like a two-check prerequisite before you're invited to belong. And so that's why you end up finding social groups and churches where people kind of act the same. People kind of have the same belief systems, the same worldviews, and things like that, because you got to have those check marks before you can belong. But here's the way that we see over and over and over again in the Gospels, the way that Jesus operates. He says, you belong. That's the starting point. You belong. Come, follow me. Come, all you who are weary and heavy laden, those of you who are worn down, who can't get your behavior right, you're not even sure what you believe, come to me. You belong, first of all. And the way that he would operate is you belong, as you are invited to belong, you will come to believe in me. And then as you come to believe in me, your life will be transformed as you follow in my footsteps, as you become my disciple, as you learn what it means to truly follow me. And then the behavior is going to take care of itself, because when you start hanging out with Jesus and you start learning the way of Jesus and you start following the path that he has for us, eventually your life becomes clearer and it becomes more obvious what it means for how we ought to live. It doesn't begin with this prerequisite of if you can check off this mark, and this mark, and you are behaving in exactly the right kind of way, and you can check off the doctrine, and you can say all the right answers, and you've got all these books of this Bible figured out, then you can belong. That's not the way it works with Jesus. The way it works with Jesus is you belong. Whatever your starting point is, you belong. And throughout the centuries, throughout all of Scripture, we see over and over again, people who had no business being welcomed by Jesus are welcomed over and over again. And his grace just keeps getting poured out over and over again. We sang about it earlier. This is amazing grace. And that amazing grace just keeps showing up over and over and over again. Last week, I had the chance to share for the Community Sunrise service. And it was awesome experience, a beautiful setting, a great way to start the day. And I shared this story that I'd shared in an Easter message here a few years ago. And it's so powerful of understanding how this plays out in people's lives. There was a guy that I met probably about 10 to 15 years ago, and he was working with this inner city ministry in the community that I was a part of at the time. And we got to talking one day, and he started sharing his story. And he was somebody who worked as the head of their men's ministry for this inner city ministry where they were trying to get people off the streets. They did a lot of work with drug rehabilitation and getting people out of homelessness, getting people out of poor economic conditions, and just trying to get them on their feet in life. And so I asked him, how did you get into this? And he shared his story with me. He said, well, I actually had a very troubled past myself. And so the way that my story went was I had been in and out of prison. I had been addicted to drugs and had gone to jail for a variety of different things, including drug charges. And all of this is going on in my life. And he said, I got out of prison. I'd been out of prison for a few weeks, and somebody invited me to an Easter service. And I go to this Easter service, and I hear this message about God's grace, and he's like, something starts stirring in my heart. And I'm like, God, I don't want to keep living this life, but I don't know what to do. I don't feel like I belong at this church. I don't feel like I fit in. I don't know what to do. And so he said, I've got a Bible. Maybe I can read a Bible, and so maybe that'll give me some answers. And so one night, he's laying in bed. He's kind of had that thought of, okay, I'm going to read my Bible at some point. And he's laying in bed, and he can't fall asleep, and he's just restless. He's just tossing and turning, and he cannot fall asleep. And he looks up at the clock, and it says 11:28. It's 11:28 at night. And he said, you know what? I'm going to go find that Bible. I'm going to read that Bible. He says, maybe this is a sign. Maybe 11:28 is a sign. Maybe that's something that's pointing me in the direction that's going to give me the answer for what I'm looking for. And so he opens up his Bible. He opens up his Bible. And when he does, he realizes there's a card stuck in a page. And this card falls out. And this has been a Bible that his grandmother had given him during one of his prison stays. She was able to get it into the prison for him. And the card was from his grandmother, and it was all this communication to him about how she was praying for him, how she wanted him to find the peace that God offered him, and wanted him to find the grace that God had for his life. And he's reading, he's got tears in his eyes, and he realizes that it's marking the 11th chapter of Matthew, and he goes, 11:28. He looks down and he reads, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. As he sat there and he read those words, he knew exactly what he needed to do with his life. He said, I don't want to do anything but give my life to Jesus and follow him because I am so tired. I am so tired and worn out of the life that I've been trying to live. And his story was not one that began with behaving the right kind of way. He wasn't there yet. He didn't even know what he believed. He just knew that he wanted to belong to someone that could give him the rest for his soul that he so desperately needed. My prayer as we move through this series is that we will start to see that following Jesus might not be what people on the outside think it is. It's an invitation to something incredible. It's an invitation to rest. It's an invitation to all the burdens that we carry. It's an invitation to cast those off. It's an invitation for all of us who feel like we've never measured up, that we're never going to measure up, that we're never going to get it right. It's an invitation to see that Jesus is there and his burden is light, his yoke is easy, and we are invited to follow him. What does it mean to follow Jesus? It means simply knowing no matter who you are, no matter how qualified you think you might be, no matter what ways you think you might have measured up, it does not matter. He simply says to you that you belong and you are invited to come and follow him.